And the fifth case for today is Ahmed versus Gonzalez.
May it please the court, my name is Dennis Muchnicki. I represent the petitioner Nuruddin Ahmed. Mr. Ahmed is sitting in the courtroom in the back. This is a pattern or practice case. Specifically, this case is governed by the rule adopted by the INS at 8 CFR 208.13B2III, which is that where there is a pattern, where there's proof of a pattern or practice of persecution against a group, the individual does not have to prove that they were individually targeted. They're entitled to past persecution as a member of that group.
Hasn't that been interpreted very narrowly?
And it applies in this case. As I've cited in the reply brief, three specific cases where the circuits have recognized that the Migdan in Somalia were one of those groups. And that's an issue that's never addressed below. In fact, 208B13, the regulation, is never even mentioned in the immigration judge's decision. The BIA summarily affirmed it without addressing it. It's thrown off as a casual comment in the respondent's brief in this court. Yet there are three other decisions that recognize exactly what's said here, that the Migdan were particularly despised because the Hawi and the Isak had perceived them to be allies of Bahrain. And an Ali versus Ashcroft from the Ninth Circuit, you know, they just scream, "Migdan traitor, you're going to get it," as they rape the woman. They didn't interview her to find out what was her relationship to the government. She was Migdan, and they raped her. And in the other two cases that are cited, Farish and Shire, they all recognize that the document, it's a historical fact that the Migdan during the Somali Civil War were particularly abused as a group. It happened. And when you take it from that standpoint, it's not addressed at all below. That's wrong. And when you remember, everything in this case is explained. When you get into inside of Mr. Ahmed's head, that he was Migdan and he had a target on his back. His ping-ponging around from here to there, every little thing he sees, he starts to run to another. And that's what, if you read the whole case, he's moving like crazy. Every time he gets the slightest little resistance, boink, goes somewhere. And that's part of that whole thing that's in his head. The bus is stopped and they're going to rob him. He leaps out because immediately he assumes there's going to be more than a robbery to him. And so that whole concept that's embodied in the regulation, which is ignored below, just can't be allowed to stand. I'm not saying that this court has to perform the function that should have been performed by the BIA in applying that regulation, but it is clearly error for both the immigration judge and the BIA to never even address it. And as I said, particularly in this case, just everything Mr. Ahmed did flows from it. The fear of the in-laws, the moving around every time when he went to, I don't even remember all the names of the little towns, and somebody said something bad to him, bink, he was gone again. The first time he'd hear anything bad about Midgan, move. And it permeates the case. In fact, it's the essence of the whole case. And yet, the case is only discussed as an isolated matter. The immigration judge and really, in the respondent's brief, they say, well, he has to prove that he was personally harmed, which isn't the standard. We have a regulation that controls here. We have case law that recognizes as a historical fact that the Migdan were particularly targeted during the Somali Civil War by the Hawi and the Isak. And that's who we were dealing with in this case, the Hawi and the Isak. Same with the claim that, well, he could have relocated in Somaliland. Somaliland is controlled by the Isak, which are, again, one of the groups that had targeted the Migdan.
Counsel, if we accept your argument, it means that every member of this clan is entitled to asylum in the United States. How can that be?
I would say that it does what my argument requires is the BIA to address and consider the facts of this case through the lens of being Megden. I'm not saying it's automatic, but it has to be factored into the evaluation. And when you factor it into the evaluation, it has an impact. It explains why he was economically deprived, where he couldn't work, because he had to flee. Why he didn't feel safe. And it's just ignored. And I understand what you're saying, and I understand why it's been narrowly construed. But the fact is, with this group, in fact, the cases I know in the Ninth Circuit now, they are routinely vacating all the denial. The government is consenting to vacating of Migden cases. On every one base, I've had two where they've agreed to vacate and remand to consider in light of Ollie versus Ashcroft. So it is that way. And it is something that has to be addressed, and it's ignored. There's nothing in that kind of decision that ignores the fundamental issue in the case. Cannot be allowed to stand. And so I would suggest to you that at a minimum, the court should vacate and remand and tell the BIA they have to look at this issue. It's a difficult issue, I agree. And really, it is for the BIA to look at it in the first instance. But that's what should be done with this case. And therefore, the summary affirmance of the immigration judge's decision that doesn't even mention the applicable regulation cannot be allowed to stand. And therefore, I ask that the case be vacated and remanded with instructions for the BIA to consider 208 CFR 208.13B2III and the facts in record about the perception that Mr. Ahmed had as a member of this particularly small clan that was viciously butchered during the Somali Civil War. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Dixton.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Dixton, representing the Department of Justice for the United States in this case. May it please the Court, the issue in this case comes down to whether substantial evidence supported the immigration judge's decision that Mr. Ahmed failed to show past persecution or that he has a well-founded fear of future persecution. Opposing counsel claims that the immigration judge in this case did not consider conditions in Somalia during the time that Mr. Ahmed claims he was persecuted there. The immigration judge did in fact consider those conditions. He found that the Migden have been able to live in Somalia. Actually, non-minority clans have been able to live in Somalia. That clan tensions had diminished there in Somalia during the time Mr. Ahmed claims he was persecuted. In addition, this standard of review before this court is extremely deferential to the agency. Mr. Ahmed, to prevail before you, Mr. Ahmed would have to show not only that the evidence in this case could support a contrary conclusion, but that no reasonable immigration judge could have found as the immigration judge did in this case. This record does not compel a contrary conclusion, Your Honor. First, Mr. Ahmed failed to show that he suffered past persecution, as the immigration judge found at 156-157 of the appellate record. These isolated incidents of harassment and idle threats from his wife's distant relatives didn't amount to persecution. And Mr. Ahmed failed to show that he would be singled out for persecution. Petitioner's family currently resides in Somalia. He has two parents and 10 siblings that live in the south, and he also has two children and a wife that live in northern Somalia. That no harm has come to these relatives is consistent with the fact that the facts in this case show there are areas in Somalia that a petitioner can safely live, as the immigration judge found in this case. And these findings, Your Honors, are supported by substantial evidence in the record, contained in various country reports, that there is no general systemic clan-based persecution in Somalia, to address opposing counsel's point. Midgan have been able to settle in various regions in Somalia. There's ample evidence in the record of this. If you look at appellate record 388, it says this is the State Department profile, which states there's no automatic correlation between clan affiliation and danger of persecution. And particularly, the danger of the threat would depend on where the applicant was in the country. And reviewing reports from the U.S. State Department and the U.K. Immigration and Nationality Directorate, the immigration judge found that Somaliland in the north was a pacified region where other non-majority clan members were able to live. In addition, he looked at the UK Somalia assessment that states that Midgan specifically have been able to live in Puntland, which is also in the north, where Mr. Ahmed's two children and wife currently live. It also says clan tensions had diminished in Somalia. And it also says that Midgan specifically have been able to settle in Mogadishu. That's at appellate record 285. Finally, the immigration judge considered that even though there is some discrimination of minority clans as found in these State Department reports, there are human rights organizations that operate freely there in Somalia in the north, to curtail this discrimination. And if I could just briefly address opposing counsel's pattern and practice claim, Your Honor, you're correct in saying that that's a very, very narrow claim. The regulation is very narrow. There has to be systematic countrywide persecution of a particular group of people. And the facts here just do not support that claim. In fact, this court in Caprick v. Ashcroft recognized that petitioner could not prevail on his claim when he relied on very general statements in State Department reports and the area in which he actually lived. There was little evidence of persecution. And it really the same is true in this case. Petitioner cites to unpleasant conditions in Somalia generally and ignores record evidence that minority groups have been able to live in the north safely and even in the south, which is the most volatile region in Somalia, according to those State Department reports. So we submit that these pattern and practice claims are reserved for the very gravest of circumstances as interpreted by the Ninth Circuit and also as interpreted by this court. And I just wanted to take a moment to distinguish the cases cited by petitioner in his reply brief. Two of these cases are non-precedential opinions, but all three of them can be distinguished on their facts. The first one that he points to is Ali versus Ashcroft. That's the only published decision that he cites. And in that case, the court found that there was past persecution, unlike this case. Mr. Ahmed did not show any past persecution. He relied on some idle threats from his wife's relatives, which the immigration judge found at page 157-158 of the appellate record were not credible threats. In Ali versus Ashcroft, Ms. Ali was gang raped in front of her husband and her brother-in-law. Her brother-in-law was shot dead when he spit on the rapist. And the family was a known supporter of Syed Barr's regime. In fact, the rapist made reference to the family's support and her support of the regime. And the State Department recognizes that known supporters of Syed Barr's regime have been subject to retaliation. But Mr. Ahmed, that's not this case. Mr. Ahmed is not a known supporter of that regime, and the immigration judge found that security conditions have improved such that he could safely return to Somalia.
Ali then was not a pattern and practice case. It was a case of specific individualized persecution against the petitioner? Or was it a combination case?
Well, Your Honor, we submit that it's a claim based on well-founded fear, and Mr. Ahmed would have to show that he was singled out for persecution because he did not meet the requirements of a pattern and practice case. To continue, the other cases cited by petitioner are also can be distinguished on their facts. The record was not developed enough in Farah versus Gonzalez to determine whether the petitioner had a well-founded fear in that case. And in addition, the Shire versus Gonzalez, also in that case, the alien and their brother were killed in that case, and the alien's father and brother were killed in that case, and the alien's testimony was corroborated in that case by State Department reports, which was not the case here. One final point that I wanted to address was the waiver argument that Mr. Ahmed raised in his reply brief. He argues that because he had ineffective assistance of counsel below, that his arguments that were not raised with the board should be considered by this court. And our position on that issue is that those issues are in fact waived, that he failed to exhaust his administrative remedies with respect to those issues. That requirement is jurisdictional, and Mr. Ahmed has had a fair, full and fair opportunity to bring those claims to the board. He was particularly fortunate in this case in that he had an opportunity to reopen his case after his first counsel failed to file a timely petition for review before this court. The board reopened the case, and at that time he could have brought those issues up and failed to do that. But in any event, as our brief points out, we believe Mr. Ahmed fails on those claims as well on the merits. I see my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal? 3.5 minutes.
Okay, first of all, counsel misstated the record. The record does not show that my client's family is safe in southern Somalia. The record was he did not know what happened to them, which is a lot different than saying his siblings and his parents are safe. Second of all, she also misconstrued the evidence relating to Somaliland rather than Somalia. There is no evidence in the record that the Migdin are safe in Somalia. There is a mention that, and even with Somaliland, which is where you have the Isak clan, and that's what my client testified to. The Isak clan particularly carried a grudge against the Migdin. So to say that, well, in general, minority clans are okay, that does not address the Migdin, who were particularly targeted, and as the three cases I cited point out. Now, the other thing that was mentioned was that there's no, she said, counsel for respondent cites to the no automatic correlation between persecution of the Migdin and their class. Well, that's exactly the specific rationale that was criticized by the Third Circuit in Farah versus Gonzalez, that merely because there's no automatic correlation begs the question whether there's in fact some correlation between Migdin affiliation and fear of attack. And that's what is not addressed in this case at all. And that's what we ask you to do, is really essentially following Farah, which is this has to be remanded to address the pattern or practice issue and how that everything in this case is filtered through the lens of my client being Migdin. And therefore, we request remand in that manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
The case is taken under advisement.